I'm Matt Lanter. You're watching Hollywood Reel with Jay Menez.
Matt, you're such a busy guy. I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
I was doing a bunch of research on you.
Uh-oh.
And that's right. And in fact, I watched Pitch Perfect 3 for the first time.
Did you really?
Recently, yeah.
Wait, did you see the 1 and 2 or no?
I did see 1 and 2.
Oh, okay, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Well, you'd be lost if you just start at 3.
Okay. I know.
All right, all right.
So I should call you Chicago.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was my... It actually had nothing to do with the character. It was just, I guess he wasn't even from Chicago. That was actually a joke in the movie. Someone was like, "Oh, hot dogs and pan pizza, deep dish pizza." And my character's like, "What are you talking about?" And they're like, "Chicago," and he's like, "I'm not from Chicago. I'm from Georgia." It was like just one of those little funny things.
That was great. Great movie, anyway.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, those girls are talented. And, you know, they've built a huge franchise for Universal that obviously is doing really, really well. I don't know if they're planning on doing a fourth one or not, but I think there's still an audience for it. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think so, especially internationally.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's some stuff that just translates internationally as far as like film goes. You know, action is one of those things that translates internationally. And I think that the singing, the acapella, stuff and comedy in general, I think, also translates just internationally. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Now, you've had a pretty long career here so far.
Yeah, don't make me feel too old.
Did you always want to be an actor?
No, not at all. I grew up in Georgia. I played a lot of sports. Baseball was like life. I actually got a job with the Atlanta Braves. I was working as a clubhouse guy, a bat boy. But we called them clubhouse attendants in Atlanta because we worked pretty hard. We would come in and do 12-hour shifts, and we'd come to the stadium at like 2 a.m. to offload the team's equipment and everything. So anyway, we worked pretty hard. But I was working with the Braves. I worked at a golf course. I was going to school for a sports management degree, actually. And the acting thing sort of just fell into my lap.
Did you play ball yourself?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Yeah, I was good. I mean, I wasn't good enough to like make it to the next level, but I enjoyed it. And I played my whole life through high school, and yeah, played football, wrestled a little bit, kind of did all that stuff. I tried basketball. I was too short for basketball though. So
yeah, no such thing.
No one passed me the ball, which, you know, that makes it not very fun.
Right.
I didn't. It just sort of happened for me. I was living in Atlanta, going to school to try to make some money. I thought maybe I could try doing some modeling stuff or maybe try commercials or something. And it wasn't a passion. It was just literally to try to make the ends meet when I was, you know, late teens or, yeah, I was late teens. Mm-hmm. And I saw in the newspaper, of all things, not on the internet, but this was back when you still looked at newspapers. And I saw an open casting call for a male modeling show. And I was like, yeah, sure, let me submit myself for that. And I did, and they ended up picking me to come out on the show. And I didn't know anything about it. I had never done any modeling, but they brought me out to LA. We shot this show. It got on TV. I ended up being kicked off the show for being too fat. That's a true story.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because I was not, I don't have the model physique. Yeah. But anyway, my manager, who I'm currently still with to this day, saw that show and saw me say on the show that I'd rather be an actor than a model anyway. He found my information, called me and said, "Hey, I'm a manager in LA. If you really do want to be an actor, let me know if you ever come out here." And that's how we connected. And you know, cut to 4, 5, 6 months later, I saved up probably about $3,000, packed up what I had in my car, and I drove to LA.
Well.
So that's how I got here.
Did you have anything holding you back in Atlanta, like any kind of family commitments or anything? Or?
Not really. My parents had just been divorced, and my mom had moved away. And, you know, I was kind of that age anyway, where I was in college. And, you know, it was just finishing my degree, finishing college. And at the time, I felt like I had an opportunity. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity that I think is now. And if it doesn't work, so what? I drive back.
Yeah,
and it worked. So here I am like 14 years later, 15 years later.
Wow.
And been doing well and having fun, because that's the main thing, is just having fun. And,
yeah.
I've been having fun, so.
So you made this transition between modeling to acting. What is it different about acting that you like that better?
I mean, truthfully, I never modeled. I booked a commercial through a modeling agency. But yeah, I mean, I know everything out on the internet says model and actor, but I never modeled. I think because I did that show that was like a modeling show, that's kind of like where it comes from. But I as soon as I moved out, I actually thought that, okay, maybe I could do some modeling to make money when I come out. And when I moved out, I started booking acting gigs before I would book modeling gigs. The modeling gigs weren't coming, but the acting gigs were.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, that's the path that I wanted anyway. So
yeah.
Yeah, so it worked out.
Did you go to work immediately when you landed in LA from this manager who's pretty good? Or was it, you know, a lot of actors that come to LA and there's a period of time where they're just going to classes and they're not working?
So I had already signed with my manager. So I was with him and he was helping facilitate some meetings and stuff for me. When I got out, I was able to sign with an agency. I signed with Abrams Artists Agency, which is a really great agency, especially for younger people. He sent me on like, I don't know, 3-4 meetings with some agents. I read for them all, basically auditioned for my agent. And a few of them wanted to work with me. I was really blessed. And so I worked with Abrams for a while. And they started sending me out. My manager was able to get me out on some auditions and stuff. And I was running out of money 3-4 months in. And I think I had called my dad, or I was about to call my dad and like beg for some money. And it was like within that week, I booked 2 jobs at the same, like basically the same time. One was 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. Do you remember that show?
Yeah.
And also there was a show on Fox called Point Pleasant at the time. And I think that only ran for like 1 season. But I booked a little one-liner guest spot with 8 Simple Rules. And funny enough, that, you know, sitcoms, they do so many rewrites throughout the week. So I had booked the job. And then just through pure coincidence, that role basically got written out. Not because of me. It was just like, that's how I do the writing. And, but they felt so bad that they basically found like one line for me just in the show. And so I did it. And, that was like, it was a hotel room party. And I was one of the people at the party and I was sitting on a couch making out with a girl and they dropped David Spade in my lap and he goes, "Get a room." And it was a hotel room. So my line was, "We already did." You know,
so that was
the one line. Yeah.
At least they left you in.
They left me in. They were so kind. Yeah.
That happens often.
Oh yeah.
You know, I've got friends that, you know, they're on something, on a big movie, small role, and they just keep showing up on other movies. Do you think that that is more just necessity of the production, or is that more a result of maintaining good relationships with everybody from the above the line down, and then just recognizing that, you know, hey, you know, this is a good guy.
Yeah. I think it's both. I mean, first of all, I don't think that many people are going to compromise their project just to have you in there, as far as compromising a role or what really fits that role. But I do think that relationships are, you know, in any sort of like business or anything, mean a lot. Mm-hmm. And especially so when you're kind to people and you're easy to work with and you produce good work, you know, chances are you're going to work again. So I definitely think there's a lot of that. But, you know, working with certain directors that just know that actor, they know their process, they know they're going to be able to play on set and kind of not be difficult. I think that means a lot to a director who has a lot to worry about on a film set, you know?
For sure.
Depending on, you know, what type of film it is, they've got budget to worry about. They've got production to worry about. They've got, DP to work. It's just, there's a lot. So when they know they can have an easygoing relationship there and get the desired product, desired result out of that actor, then yeah, I think it's a easy route to keep hiring them.
Have you spent much time behind the camera?
Not on a professional level. I would love to kind of get more into that. I've written a few things. I've written a few TV shows. And I've actually tried to go out on a few of those and sell them. It's hard to sell a show.
Trust me, I know.
Yeah. But, I have a good bit of behind the camera work experience because of my wife's YouTube channel. And we try to produce good quality content and that's her job. So, and I enjoy that stuff. So, in that regard, yes, but on a professional level, not so much. But I have aspirations too. I think it'd be stressful, but I would love to, direct some things and certainly sell a couple of shows that I've written and put the work into already. I've got some great ideas for some other stuff. So, maybe down the road.
Yeah. Did you have formal training for acting before you moved to LA?
No, I didn't. Outside of church plays, I did not. Once I got to LA, I got in a lot of class. I've done a lot of, that's not true. I did take one acting class in Atlanta where I was living. It was called at the Alliance Theater in Atlanta. But after I got out here, I enrolled in several classes and several different teachers and even voiceover classes and all kinds of stuff. For me, I'm not knocking class by any means because you can learn a lot. But for me, I think that I learn better by being on set. I learn more through hands-on experience.
If you get that opportunity.
If it's true. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, if you don't get the opportunity, then it's tough to obviously learn from being on set. But you can still try to get involved in, small things, student films, things like that. Go down to USC and, those guys, they're looking for help. And, you can get experience in different ways.
Yeah, just creating your own stuff. Find a bunch of other filmmakers that have different roles and just make your own stuff.
And now, 15 years ago when I came out, or 14 or whatever it was, it's a different thing. YouTube wasn't around, Canon 5Ds weren't around. I mean, now you can make some really, really high quality content for, by comparison, a small amount of money. I don't know that there's any excuses now not to get involved and just go for it.
So true. Yeah. Why do you think you get so many good opportunities?
I think that I get opportunities. I mean, I have to say that I think that there is an element of talent there. I feel like I should have some sort of confidence in that area. I think there's an element of talent. I do think that I try to be as professional and easy as I can to work with. I enjoy being on set. I have fun on set. I always try to keep the mindset of I'm grateful and I'm blessed to have every job that I have and every friend that I have and I think when you come from a place of being grateful and you come from a place of not taking anything for granted, it shows, and I think people want to be around you and want to work with you. And I take what I do very serious. I put my work in and I'm kind to people on set, I think, probably not every single moment. I probably have moments of frustration where maybe not everyone's like, that's a good dude. But, but I think in general, yeah.
Yeah. I think those are a couple elements that you mentioned that are just so key to success anywhere in life.
Absolutely.
The gratitude, the kindness.
Yeah.
And it pays dividends.
Yeah.
I think if that just becomes part of your being, not you just aiming that towards certain people who you think can are influential, that can benefit you in the future, but if you show up that way to the world, whoever they are.
Yeah. I'm Christian, so I feel like if I can at any way show Jesus through how I day-to-day act around people, then I have you know, I've done what I wanted to do. So that's part of it for me too. And yeah, I don't know that there's just a love and a kindness that you treat people with. And you know, it's like that old saying, you treat people how you want to be treated. So,
right.
You know, I think that's part of it.
Amen.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I just know that you to be, you know, talented, very humble guy.
Oh, thanks.
Is really when we first met, what really stood out to me.
Oh yeah, thanks.
I think it's just very admirable. And then, you know, the guys that we know in common that just talk the world to you. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Thank you. I think being humble also is a huge part of things, you know, in this business, like really anything could go away at any time. And it all sort of fits into the same stuff. You just, you know, nothing for granted and being appreciative and grateful for everything. But it's a crazy business and it's a crazy world. Mm. It's a crazy life. So be good to people, you know, and like it almost takes too much energy to be, you know, hard to work with and you know, I don't know what kind of language is appropriate here, but it almost takes too much energy to be nasty.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
It doesn't really take that much effort to, it's not really going out of your way to be kind to people.
Yeah.
So you might as well just spread the good vibes around, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's shift gears here a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about your family life because I know that you've got a newborn.
Yeah.
Your wonderful wife, Angela, you guys do a podcast together and also you support her generously in her endeavors. I know she's a YouTube influencer.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I want to hear a little bit about that. I guess, first of all, do you come from a big family?
No, I don't. I have one biological sister. Now I've got several other steps. So now I have a big family. But growing up, it was just my sister and I. Biologically, and we grew up in Atlanta. We really didn't have any other family in the same town. Or I've got family in South Georgia. I've got family in Ohio. So no, it's just us. Yeah.
How about your family now? Do you want to have a lot of kids?
I don't know. I've always thought two is a great number. You know, I probably because it's just my sister and I. My wife is an only child, so two sounds good to her as well. But I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of stress that comes with one. So I'm still trying to navigate how to deal with one and the whole shift that happens because everything changes. Like everything changes when you have a kid. And, so we're still navigating those waters of what is this new life? I think ideally we would love a brother or a sister for our daughter now. We'll see. I don't know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I know you guys are going to make great parents. You are making great parents.
We think so, but then there's days that we think we're not good parents at all. We've already been to the emergency room because we've dropped her on her head. Everything's okay. we try. We certainly love her, that's for sure, and we provide. So, yeah, there's no lack of love.
Yeah. Even though there's that flat spot there.
No, she's good. She's good. She's been totally checked out. And the doctors assured us. They were like, we have so many parents come in here every day. Yeah. It's okay. Don't worry. So we've given ourselves some grace in that area.
Yeah.
You have to. That's what we're learning also. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's a big thing. You got to give yourself grace as a parent, you know, because there's a lot of things that you're going to do wrong or you think is wrong or your choices and, you know, and I'm sure that's only going to continue, especially as she grows and becomes, you know, a kid and then a teenager and all that kind of stuff. There's going to be a lot of choices that you have to make as a parent. You just got to give yourself grace to make those choices and I guess just love them and, you know, do what you can to provide.
Yeah, they're more resilient than we think.
I mean, that's true.
Babies have survived since we were cavemen and
there
were no doctors and no Google.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. So.
You know, it'll work out.
Yeah, she's still kicking so far, so she's good.
When you guys were expecting, you guys actually started a podcast called Hello Bump, which is now Hello Baby, right?
Yeah, we did. So we thought that it would be cool to kind of journal our experience as first-time expecting parents. You know, the podcast thing was kind of really coming on strong, and we kind of thought, you know, and you and I have talked about, I'm a bit of a gearhead myself, and I like photography and video gear and audio gear and stuff like that. And so we thought, well, what if we just like get on and do like just an audio journal? And then, you know, because being sort of public figures, or we weren't sure if we wanted to put that information out there and share that. But then we started doing it, and we really enjoyed being in front of the microphone, talking about what was going on. And it's kind of therapeutic in a way, kind of fun. And we just thought, you know what, let's make this a podcast, and it could help other parents who are expecting. And you know, it could just be fun to listen to, and we can look back on it, and we can have our daughter listen back on it when she's 20 years old, and listen to week to week how mom and dad were doing when she was, you know, just kicking around in the womb there. So we did it and enjoyed it so much that we thought we would go ahead and continue and morph Hello Bump into Hello Baby once she was there, because we were like, well, now the real journey begins with raising her. So there's got to be plenty to talk about now. So that's what we're doing. We're right now currently on episode like 54. We actually just did an episode, a two-part episode on postpartum depression. My wife has been going through some of that. And, you know, I experienced some anxiety things myself, which I actually now think was a postpartum for a male. I mean, it's all the same type of stuff, right? It's all the same type of feelings. And so we kind of talked about a little bit of that on the podcast and my wife's experience with it. And we had a couple of heavy episodes, but we really hope that can help other people. When they listen to it, they can feel a little bit more normal. They can, you know, turn to it for a little bit of help here and there. And, you know, so we're having fun with that.
Yeah, that seems really unique as far as the podcast goes. I've never heard of anybody doing that. Maybe there are, but
when we started, there weren't. I think there are a few out there now. I'm not saying they're copying us or anything, but there were a couple, but not really in the format that we did. There were a couple out there where, first of all, I didn't think the quality was very good. so we were striving to put a better quality podcast out there, and also, there were a few on there that were a few moms talking about their experience together, but we couldn't really find any that it was the father and the mother talking about their shared experience. So,
doing a podcast not only is therapeutic for yourself, it helps other parents and future parents, but I imagine that there's a value to performers. If you're an actor, did you ever think about that aspect of it as being a way to kind of just sharpen your your craft in another area?
I suppose so. I do a lot of voiceover work, as you know, and you know, hearing yourself constantly on the podcast and understanding how that sounds in other car speakers and whatever, it does give you a little bit more awareness and control maybe over your voice, which obviously plays into on camera acting as well. You kind of learn to, through voice acting, you learn to express solely through your voice, which helps in a podcast too. You know, because then you can kind of make it a little more entertaining, or a little more expressive just through your voice. So yeah, it all kind of seamlessly, good synergy between voice acting and podcasting and on-camera acting.
Yeah, I think podcasting is great. Like you said, you know, there's that technical aspect. So getting back to the behind the camera, behind the scenes work, there's storytelling, because, you know, there's a narrative you're constructing really in every episode, right?
There is, although I'll say that's one of our weak points, I think, on our podcast, is that oftentimes we don't go in with much of a narrative or a story. I mean, we have a topic we want to talk about, but we've actually found that on our podcast, people seem to enjoy it when we're just kind of off the cuff, when we just sort of like get on and say, we don't really know what we're going to say, but let's start talking. But it's kind of fun for us too, because then it becomes more of a conversation between my wife and I, as opposed to a structured thing. I'm not saying that's bad. You know, like I said, I think we actually could use a little more structure sometimes, but a lot of times it's pretty just you know, whatever happens, happens. Whatever we say, we say.
Your content is pretty entertaining. Oh, I recently saw a YouTube video on Angela's show.
Yeah.
Which is Hello Gorgeous, right?
Yeah. So quick backstory on that. She was a full-time fraud investigator. She had a big girl job at Allstate, right? She went and sussed people out that were faking insurance claims and everything. And we got married in 2013, and we didn't want to be the couple that is an actor and I go all over the place and she stays home. We basically didn't want to get married and then live apart. So we kind of made a commitment that she was going to quit her job. She was going to move with me or be with me anywhere I traveled, anywhere I went. And we started in 2013, we started her YouTube channel and her blog. And she calls it Hello Gorgeous. And she does makeup, looks, reviews stuff on there. She does lifestyle stuff now too. And that also allowed me to play a little bit, you know, behind the scenes. And it was just something that when I wasn't on set and I wasn't studying for something, it's something that we did together. I could exercise my creativity behind the camera. She could do her thing on camera. And, I gotta tell you now that her business now financially is much, much more lucrative than a full-time job as a fraud investigator.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, the world of influencers has changed so much in the last 5-6 years. It's pretty crazy.
There's so much opportunity for the people who are willing to get in there, do the hard work, find a market for whatever they're offering. But it's really amazing that really anybody could create a full-time income.
It's true. It's true. It does take dedication though. I mean, I can't take that away from Rye. She spends countless hours between her blog, her YouTube, and you know, just the Instagram and all that kind of stuff. I mean, since we had the baby, she's sort of like toned it down a little just to be able to spend more time, but 70 hours a week is not uncommon.
Wow.
Obviously it's not hard labor, but man, she puts a lot of time and dedication because she writes everything on her blog. It's all her voice. It's, you know, her ideas for YouTube, of course, shooting it. And it's a lot of work, but it pays off and it allows for a lot of flexibility and, you know, exactly what we're doing. We're able to travel anywhere and be anywhere. And we're about to move to Toronto for 5 months and she's able to do her thing anywhere.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it's a lot of fun too.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
You were doing her makeup on that video.
Every now and then I'll get on the channel with her and we just have fun. And yeah, there's a popular hashtag floating around that's boyfriend or husband does my makeup. And so the guys get on there and, you know, and do the makeup. And most of the people on YouTube, like the guys get on there and they try to just be funny and goofy and they'll do like crazy makeup on purpose. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm going to get on there. And I'm actually going to try to do her makeup good. I was like, I've been in makeup trailers. I know how to do girls' makeup. I can do that. And so I actually got on there. I mean, we did have fun with it. But I tried to do her makeup good. And, you know, I think it came out okay. But a lot of guys are, like, afraid to get in there. They think they're going to come off as, like, you know, like, I don't know, feminine or something. But man, I went for it. And I think it was all right.
Yeah, of course. It was a good episode.
Well, she told me it was terrible color choices. I put like blue eyeshadow and I don't know. I guess it didn't work, but whatever. I think it was all right.
You did your best.
I did my best.
Where do you think you struggled in your career the most?
I mean, as an actor, I think we all have strengths and weaknesses. I think one of my strengths is I can look at a script and I think I can break it down pretty easily in my head that I feel like I know how that scene should be played, or I know how that character, I can hear it. Whether my body does that is sort of a different thing. But yeah, I feel like I'm good at knowing how it should look or what would make it good. I'm not good at memorization. Other actors are, some are, I'm not. It takes me a long time. I'll do a scene and director, y'all cut 5 minutes later, it's gone. Like I don't have it memorized anymore. But struggle, I mean, I have really, really been blessed my entire career. I feel like I've worked a lot. I've certainly gone through periods where I haven't worked. And those thoughts of like, am I ever going to work again? They certainly creep in, and I think every actor does that. But I've worked pretty consistently. I mean, I 2005, I got here, and within like 6 months of being in LA, I had actually booked a series regular gig on ABC with Gina Davis and Donald Sutherland. I played her son, which that just doesn't happen to people. They don't come out and book something like of that magnitude that early. But really, I mean, I've been working since 2005 and had some pretty amazing gigs. That was a long-winded answer, but yeah.
What do you think your first big break was?
It was Commander in Chief. It was called Commander in Chief with Gina Davis. I mean, once you've been hired as a series regular, you know, that automatically kind of says something on your resume, and other casting directors are they're aware of you because they've seen you or they've heard of you, or just the fact that your resume says you were played opposite Gina Davis, and I've got all these all this reel tape now with me and Gina Davis, and you know, Oscar winner. So that was definitely my first big break. And yeah, I mean, I've done some pretty great stuff, worked with some great people. Lawrence Fishburne, I did a theater with him in downtown LA. I booked a role on Heroes after that. And well, yeah, but that was my first probably big break. Yeah.
Is there a point where you felt that you made it in Hollywood?
Yeah, when I booked my very first job and I could afford a vanilla latte from Starbucks. I remember that day specifically because I didn't have much money at all. And I remember the very first day that I was in a hotel. I had just worked on Point Pleasant, which we talked about. And in the hotel, they had a Starbucks. And I was able to buy myself a small vanilla latte. And I legitimately thought, like, this is great. I'm good. Because I could afford that $4 latte. Yeah. That was it.
Good. It's great to manage your expectations.
Yeah. I mean, in a more realistic way, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I ever really know that or think that. I mean, I don't know. Some people might think that's silly, but I mean, I guess with every project, there's a level of like, okay, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'll probably continue to, you know, make some money doing this and pay my bills. But actors are weird, man. We always just feel like this job that we're doing or our next job is our last job and we might not work again. And most of us think that way, I think. I mean, unless you're like a Robert Downey Jr. level, I mean, clearly. But I don't know. I've had some people tell me like, you're always going to work. You're always going to be able to work, you know, in TV at least. And it's just like, I don't know, maybe. I appreciate you saying that, but I don't know. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I'm just grateful for any job that I get. I'm grateful for it. And I mean, I guess I do, you know, I'm more choosy with things that I do. I guess I'm saying all this with a bit of tongue in cheek, but.
Is there anything that you've always wanted to do but haven't been able to nail yet?
Man.
Or somebody you've wanted to work with, director, actor?
Yeah, gosh. I guess there's a lot of things, there's a lot of people I could say. I really like Sally Field. I really like, obviously, Meryl Streep is amazing. To see Daniel Day-Lewis in person work would be incredible. I really admire the career of Ryan Reynolds. I love that he does comedy and also drama really well. I would love to work with Paul Newman. I would love to work with Montgomery Clift, who I can't because he's an old movie star and no longer here with us. But gosh, there's so many people that I could go through and tell you I would have loved to have worked with them or, you know, had a conversation with them. But man, presently,
I could totally see you following in Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, thanks. That's a career I really admire. You know, him and Bradley Cooper, they're both sort of that leading man kind of thing that I kind of fit into in a way. And but I love doing comedy, actually. Oftentimes I feel more comfortable doing comedy than I do doing drama. I just keep getting cast in dramas. So I've gotten some opportunities to do some comedies, but
is it that brooding thing?
I don't know what it is. I don't know why. I don't know why. It's the mustache. I don't know why I keep getting cast in dramas. I think that, I mean, I guess it's great. I guess they think that I do a great, you know, great enough job, but I've just been working. I work a lot and doing drama stuff. But yeah, anytime I get an opportunity with comedy, I usually jump at it because I love doing comedy.
How do you keep yourself sharp?
I think you go through periods if you're not working where you kind of have to knock the rust off once you get back on set a little bit. But I mean, watching film and TV, which is pretty easy for all of us now, you can kind of just watch. I mean, I watch objectively. Sometimes I can kind of let go of that and just watch a story as a story and be like a regular old viewer. But a lot of times I'm looking at like performances and stuff like that. You know, so I think when you watch some talented people and some of your favorites, you can like pick up things that they're doing and how they, you know, how they work, and you can kind of incorporate all that. It's almost like a superhero that like sucks up other people's superpowers. You might not be able to do it as good as them, but if you can just like take little pieces of what, you know, your favorites are doing and work on those things, that maybe one day you could be, you know, as good as they are at that. So yeah, watching film, reading scripts, breaking down scripts, writing. I actually think that writing my own scripts, like we had talked about, has given me a new perspective on acting, and vice versa. You know, because now as an actor, breaking scripts down, you really realize that every single word is very on purpose. Mm. And when it's not, then why is it there? And so as a writer, you know that unless that thing is serving a purpose, don't put it in there. You know, so.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
So even for actors, write.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for writers, try acting. Like, not necessarily go out and go on auditions, but try it. You know, put on some plays and skits with your friends or whatever, your other writing partners, and see. It's a funny story. See if it works. Funny story is, it's just a story I had heard, but Sam Jackson doing Star Wars. You know, obviously Star Wars is notorious for sometimes wooden dialogue. It's been said, the prequels. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so I love the prequels personally. But a lot of people talk about the wooden dialogue in the prequels. But there's a story that goes that Sam Jackson was plays Mace Windu for any Star Wars fans out there. Was on set and he was and George was directing, and he was like, "George, you can write this stuff, but you can't say it." So kind of goes in. Try saying it, you know. Try doing it, and then if it works, then your actor can do it.
Yeah, you know?
But that's also part of the actor's job, is to make it work. So. That's another thing.
Some actors say that they hate watching their own performances, or even don't watch their own performances. Yeah. Where are you in that camp?
I do hate watching myself. I cringe when I watch myself the first time. And then if I watch it again, I feel like I can learn from myself. So I do watch my stuff. Because like we sort of mentioned earlier, if I know how a scene's supposed to be played, but my body, my instrument doesn't necessarily do that, if I'm not watching myself, I don't know that what I thought I was doing or what I was expressing, if that's really what the audience is receiving. Mm. So I can learn for myself, but it's tough. I mean, you cringe the first time through, because all I can see is just choices that I should have made and didn't make or whatever. And you know, no one else is going to see that, and everyone else is going to be like, "What do you mean? It's great." But you know, that's what you do. But that's what makes us all good at whatever we're doing, is the drive to want to be better than what you are. You know, what you're putting out there. So
it's part of being professional. It's
part of being, and in anything, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to see your stuff and want it to be better, or, you know, and it just is what it is. But
yeah.
But the stuff, like, I heard like Johnny Depp doesn't watch any of his stuff. And I mean, that's fine. That's great, I guess. But yeah, I feel like I can learn from it sometimes.
For sure. So for the benefit of actors who maybe they're working a little bit, but they certainly don't have that longevity, that 10 plus year track record that you do, what sort of advice can you provide to help them get to the next level?
Keep at it. Obviously, if you're an actor and you've been doing it a little while, you know that rejection comes all the time. So you got to push through that. One of the things that I feel like was a turning point for me as an actor in my head was when I started getting cast in things, and then I would be behind the camera during someone else's audition. you know, like they were being cast opposite me, or for, you know, a girlfriend role or something that I was already cast. And it occurred to me that sometimes it doesn't matter how good you are, you're just not that character. And that, I felt like that was a turning point for me, that if I didn't get a job, it wasn't necessarily because I wasn't good, or, you know, it might've just been, I just was not inherently that character. I also learned from that experience that the casting director is your friend. You know, prior to that, you kind of go in there, and it's a nerve-wracking thing to do, to audition. I mean, I hate auditioning, but the casting director wants you to be great. And so if you can go in there with that mindset that they're your best friend, they're your biggest champion, they want you to be amazing, they shouldn't be there to add pressure. So kind of like those two things, when I really realized those two things, it really helped me a lot. That the casting director is your friend, so don't be nervous around them. If you want to be nervous in front of the producers, fine. but they also want you to be great. You know, they want to find the guy.
Right.
But
call it a day.
And call it a day.
Yeah.
But that, and then sometimes, you know, sometimes there's nothing that you could have done. You're just not that character.
Right.
And you actually could have been you could actually be a better actor than the person they hired. But for whatever reason, that person just embodied the character more naturally.
Yeah, and that's a great perspective on what a lot of actors see as rejection.
Right.
To the topic of rejection and failure, how do you look at that, and how does that translate to the rest of your life?
I can't sit here and lie and tell you, like, it doesn't sting sometimes still, because there's certain roles that you really want, or you really want to work with this material or with this director or with this other actor, and you don't get it. And, you know, I mean, I can say what I'm saying, but it can still sting. When you get knocked off the horse, you got to get back up and try again. And that's, as an actor, you got to do that over and over and over and over. So kind of trains you for the rest of life obstacles, I suppose.
For sure. So what are you excited about most these days?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, life-wise, like we talked about, my daughter, every day is a fun adventure with my daughter. And then I got a project coming up that I'm pretty excited for. It's called Jupiter's Legacy. It's a Netflix show. It's a superhero show. So that'll be my first time playing a superhero on camera. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be quite an adventure. Netflix is basically creating their own superhero universe, and this show is going to be sort of the first go at that universe. So I'm pretty excited for that. I'm pretty excited to introduce these characters and these new superheroes to the world on a large scale. You know, that most people don't really know. Only the comic book fans might know them.
Right, so it's been out there.
It's been out there, yeah. Since 2013, actually. I'm not a huge comic book guy, but from what I understand, that comic book was pretty successful in that world. So, yeah, Netflix bought the rights to all this Mark Miller stuff, and actually bought his whole universe that he created. Kind of like a Disney Marvel situation.
Can you set up that show for me and kind of where your character fits in?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's called Jupiter's Legacy. The comic is there's two comics, actually. The Jupiter's Legacy is kind of like, what if Superman had a kid and that kid couldn't live up to Superman? So it's a multi-generational family thing. It's really cool. It's kind of something we've not really seen before, about these original superheroes and now the second generation of their kids. And they have powers, but it's hard to, like, get out of the shadow of these great original superhero parents. And then there is a spinoff comic called Jupiter's Circle that actually takes place all in the past, and it's all about those original six superheroes. I play one of the original six, so you will see me in multiple decades. My superhero name is Sky Fox. Guy's name is George, and he's a pretty cool character. Yeah.
And I know you're preparing really hard physically for that role.
Yeah, trying to hit the gym a little bit. You know, trying
a little bit.
Yeah, well, if you're a superhero, you gotta try to back it up a little bit. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, I've noticed your transformation the last couple of months there.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I'm working on it, you know.
I know that you've supported Alzheimer foundations in the past and are now supporting a cause having to do with human trafficking, right?
Yeah. Actually, I'm about to go to Vegas and talk on that a little bit. But the Alzheimer's thing is something I've been working with them for several years now. My grandmother passed away from Alzheimer's a few years back. So I just saw how that affected her and affected my family and, my mom as one of her primary caretakers and how awful the disease is. It really just is really, really awful thing. And a lot of people and a lot of families are affected. And so anything that I can do to help spread awareness on that disease and to younger people, because a lot of people think of Alzheimer's as just an old person's disease. Mm-hmm. And the sad thing is it's just not the case. It's happening to people earlier and earlier, even, in their 30s even. So it's just really, it's a really, really sad thing to see kind of the
degeneration
of who they are and their essence right in front of you over the course of time is tough. Mm. It's tough, obviously for them, but for the people around them, it's just as tough, because you walk in one day and they don't even know who you are, and it's weird because they're still there, but they're not really there. So anyway, it's pretty terrible, and anything I can do to help raise awareness.
Well, it's great when high-profile people can use their audience and the attention that they have to divert that light onto a cause like that.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of think of it as a responsibility.
For sure. And why is human trafficking important to you?
It's something that, first of all, one of my castmates on 90210, she's pretty much made that her life passion.
Who is that?
Her name is Annalyn McCord.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She's made it a passion of hers. I told her I was heading out there to Vegas to speak on it a little bit, and she was asking me about it. But I think it's obviously it's an important subject. I think to look at the numbers is staggering, and the places where it's happening. Here you think of it sort of as a thing that happens overseas and in third world countries, and that's just not the case. It happens here in LA. It happens in Atlanta, Georgia. It happens in Ohio, where I'm from. Matter of fact, I think Ohio and that Cleveland area is like, I want to say, don't quote me on this, I could be totally wrong, but I think I saw it was like one of the third largest areas for human trafficking abduction in the states, Ohio.
Wow.
And that's my hometown and everything. So I just think that's another thing that the more awareness we can raise, and especially now that I've had my daughter, it's something that's more on the forefront of my mind. I mean, it's so sad, but now when I go to the park, I think about it. I think about like somebody could just grab her and the awful, awful, awful things that could happen to her and happen to our family. It saddens me and it angers me. And, so anything that I can do also to help lend a voice or spread some awareness or help raise some funds for relief efforts, I'm happy to do.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So where can we find out more about you?
Oh, gosh.
Projects.
Well, IMDb is always a pretty reliable place, although my dad seems to think IMDb is the end-all be-all. There'll be a project on there that it's mistakenly put on there, and he's like, well, you're doing this thing, and I'm like, no, that's a mistake. And he's like, well, I don't know. It says it on IMDb. I'm like, Dad, I would know. But IMDb is a good place to check things out professionally. Probably my Instagram or my Twitter. It's just at Matt Lanter on both. It's I control all that. So, but I'm always tweeting about my life and my projects, and if I've got stuff that I feel is worthy of posting pictures, I feel like I'm not good at Instagram. A lot of people are really good at Instagram. I feel like I'm not good at it. I need to post more pictures and stuff, but you know, that's a good way. You know,
Instagram's a lot of work. Well, social media is a lot of work to do it right.
It's a lot of work,
right?
It's a lot of work. I mean, and I know it's a great tool to like connect with people, but it is a lot of work.
All right, last question.
Yep.
So you've lived a really, you're still young, but you've lived a pretty full life, had a decent career,
yeah,
and now you're starting a new family. What does this all mean to you? Is there a takeaway that you can, at this kind of this midpoint in your life, say about it all?
I don't want to like come off as too cheesy or anything, but really, I mean, really, the stuff that I do on camera and I mean, none of it means anything, really. It's really about just your experiences in life and with your people that you love and your friends and your family. And I think I mentioned it earlier, it's been 14 or 15 years I've been working and I'm having fun, and that's the main thing. And if I'm not having fun, I'm done. Like, I don't want to do it anymore. Nothing else really interests me other than just doing life and having fun and loving the people I want to love and, you know, having amazing experiences.
Well, that's what success is all about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of times, you know, you can mistake success for other things, you know, financial success and whatever. And I don't think it's about that. Mm. And I think that's what keeps you having fun, actually. Because if your level of success is just like a monetary value or something, I don't know. What's beyond that?
Well said.
Yeah, I don't think it was well said, but thank you.
Well, Matt, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate
Man,
it.
Man, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my
I'll
pleasure.
I'll see you in the gym.
Yes, unfortunately. We'll get stronger together, my friend.
We will.
Superhero
we will.
Shape.
That's right.
I'm gonna make you a superhero.
Well, we'll see we'll see if that can happen.
All right.
But I'm glad to support you, Matt.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Yep.